Now, I'm just going to say a few words, if I may, about this book, The Incubus of Intervention. Is Greg on the... There he is. No.
Here he is.
There he is. That's him, isn't it?
Yes.
He's the author. He's much better looking on this thing. He's... there he is anyway. I was given this last week to read so that I can put a few words together to say some things about it. Now, The Incubus. Well, I had to chase up my Latin dictionaries to find out what incubus meant. It's apparently a latter-day word in Latin language, when Latin was decaying as a means of communication around about the 3rd and 4th century, until it decayed itself into the Italian language, the Spanish language, and all those other languages around the Mediterranean. And incubus was a word that was used to give to have a tag for what people in those days believed was an evil spirit that hovered around somewhere up there around the world and looked down and every now and again inspired people to do the wrong thing. And I say this with some carefulness, of course, that the main purpose of the incubus, or the main aim of the incubus, was to have people who were in a state of flux or mixed up in some fashion or other, to develop a sense of wanting to seek their pleasure on the person of the person who was next to them. In other words, to have sex. It was quite extraordinary that this was the word. Now, that's what I read. I'm not sure whether Greg has read the same Latin dictionary to produce this book. but nevertheless, if it is, it shows that he's a very widely studied and read man who can come up with this sort of The Incubus of Intervention. Now, in the 1940s, when I was just starting to become a fairly sniffy human being, I was a little boy in the Riverina, and I was brought up with a sense of terror. I lived in the bush with my parents, and my parents kept on telling me that someday we were going to be taken, this country was going to be, and it was going to be in the next year or two, was going to be taken over by the Japanese because they were fighting. And I didn't know very much about Japan or Japanese, but I'd heard some recordings on the radio, or the wireless as we called it in those days, the Japanese language, and it was a most unspeakable sort of a language, and I didn't want to do that. But that was the beginning of it. That time in history was the time when a lot of things began to collapse. For instance, the whole Nazi socialist movement, the National Socialist movement of Nazism, and Adolf Hitler was one of the awful things that happened. It had been going on long before that. Then there was the growth of the communist powers in Eastern Europe and Russia and so on. All of this developing and going to be a crushing experience for millions and millions of people, and it was going to be the death of millions and millions of people. And while that was going on around Europe especially, and parts of Asia, and then with the Japanese invasion and so on, there began to develop another collapse. And the collapse was the collapse of colonialism, as we understood it, of political colonialism. And it was essentially, not totally, but essentially British, French, Dutch, and they were the three nations that held on to colonial structures and forces and economies and politics around your country and my country here. We, of course, were part of the British colonialism, where we would send people to go fight for Queen and Country or King and Country and all that sort of stuff. And I remember when I was a kid, living from the bush, and my parents discussing having to send butter to England at something like 5 cents a, well it wasn't cents, it was 5 pence a pound, and we had to pay 15 or whatever it was, and couldn't work out why, how this could happen. I was only a little kid at the time, trying to come to grips with this sort of convoluted economic pressure that was going on around the world. And of course, if you're a farmer, my dad was a farmer, he wasn't a dairy farmer, but there were dairy farmers down the road and over the hill, and they weren't going to be paid anything more than 5 cents plus a little bit more by federal governments that were terribly, terribly pro-British and so on. Now that was what was happening. Part of it was the Dutch East Indies. And the Dutch East Indies were centred in Batavia, Jakarta, and all these sorts of places. And there are a few people decided they'd liked the sound of independence. Sukarno was one of them. And so he didn't know what sort of a hegemony he wanted to produce in Indonesia, so I'm told. Was it going to be a federation of states? Was it going to be a unitary state? Was it going to be a united series of states like the United States or whatever? He eventually opted for the one that presently prevails. And a lot of people still regard that as having been an awful political mistake. That's what some people regard. But that's the sort of mess that was going on. And stuck away in the middle of it, of course, was a little place that we call West Papua, as a central part of it. But there were other things going on as well. And Greg has, I couldn't believe it when I started reading this book. Louise, she forced me to read it, as only Louise can force people, because I knew that if I didn't read it, she'd just keep on ringing me up until I jolly well did. But I read the book I read it twice actually. I read it the first time in about 3 days. I just couldn't put it down. And then I went back and tried to be a little more analytical and have a look at all of his sources to see where he got all of his material from. And the mind boggles. The mind boggles. I found the book disturbing, absolutely disturbing, and if it was the truth, it was awesomely disturbing. It had in it, and I'm sure Greg would be able to give the exact sort of substantive evidence you must give in order to make the claim he makes on all these sorts of things. So, especially when you start talking about analyses of things and systematization of policies and so on, you're beginning to shape up what you've been reading and so on. And there were some evil people in the world who had a lot to say about West Papua. And the two main substantive collectives of decision making was the United States of America and Indonesia. And it's quite incredible how each of them played one another off, how each of them tried to develop a sense of control and possessiveness about the future of this part of the world. Remember the decolonization process, which was being pushed by the United Nations around about this time, which was being backed by the one country that was giving it most of its money to keep itself going, which was the United States. It had to be liberal, democratic structures to take place. Not dictatorships, not military dictatorships, not benign anything else, but liberal democracies. And of course, if they were going to be anything like America, God knows what might have happened about them all. But that wasn't the main thing that was going on. And when I first read it, I thought, that's why I had to read it a second time. I began to suspect that maybe there was a bit of building up of conspiracy theories about all of this sort of thing. You know, conspiracy theory is a way of trying to understand things, which you, you haven't put your finger right, quite or right on it to be able to prove it, but at least that's the way I saw it anyway. But when I read it the second time, no, it was much more substantive than all that. In America, there were a whole pile of people, and there's no point in giving names to them, but I will mention one name because I think he deserved it. He was such a bad man. And his name was Alan Dulles. He was a brother of John Foster Dulles. Some of you are old enough to remember him. But you've got to be nearly as old as me to remember all that, but a lot of you aren't. But John Foster Dulles was the Secretary of State, you know, the Hillary Clinton of Eisenhower days. And just as verbose, I have to say, too. But Alan was a malevolent person of the first order, a liar, a manipulator of people. The one thing that struck me, and I kept on writing it after about 10 pages of these things, I write down something of what I think of those 10 pages. You know what? In every one of them, I went back and said, there are no principles in this. The only thing that it seemed to me that Alan Dulles was after, not only him, but other people in the CIA in America and other various organizations, and also on the other side of Indonesia, they were after money, finance, the gospel of the economy, and especially as it was expressed in tons of gold at Freeport. And then when they began to realize they were floating on billions of liters of oil and petrol and gas. And it was quite extraordinary how there was a manipulation of various organizations and structures, decision-making processes, to try and get control of all of these sorts of things. The Indonesians tried to do it, the Americans tried to do it, the Dutch tried to do it, and others tried to do it. But the one people who were given no say in it, were the people who were living on top of it, namely the West Papuans. And when I'm saying this, I'm saying something that's very similar to the story that I could be telling you about East Timor. On the top of it, you don't get, well, Timor is getting a bit of it now because they've got their independence. But I found all of this deeply unsettling. Because other people who were involved in the process of the decision making were people like John F. Kennedy. And other people who are held in high regard by political analysts around the world. Australia was playing, I think, almost the jester of the court. We were small time in this. In matter of fact, I don't think we've changed very much, to tell you the honest truth. If you want to analyse, and if you want to be both critical and honest about what's happened, about shooting two Australians, for instance, and read the text and see what went on, and then find that 2 days after it's all over, that we are being lectured and told again from on high that we must be good friends with Indonesia or else. Where do you go? Well, I don't want to go on any longer. But I reckon if I could persuade each of you to buy one of these books and then get another 50 people to buy the other book, I would have done well. I think Greg deserves congratulations for writing the jolly thing and making it possible for us to find out something that's gone on not terribly far from our shores. And in maybe even in a negative sense, but I also suspect, partly in a positive sense, we have made an addition to this whole thing as well. It is a very dense text. You look up the sources of information that he's used over many years, and you'll see just how this man has tried to put this together and make sense of it. Not only is it dense, it's disturbing. And I think when you get hold of a book that should disturb you, it's worth reading. Mm-hmm. So I congratulate Greg. I hope that the book does well, Greg, and I hope it furthers the cause of this whole West Papuan struggle for freedom and for independence. because in the long run, nature gave them these gifts, not to the big wigs in the United States, not even the big wigs in Indonesia, but to them, and it should be theirs. Thank you.